From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1994. That's a year that became a kind of dividing line for some gun owners in New York State. High-capacity magazines made before 1994 were still legal, but any high-capacity magazine made thereafter was against the law. Gun owners would know when the magazine was made because magazines made after that time were essentially labeled by year. But the New York SAFE Act banned all high-capacity magazines, no exceptions. How many high-capacity magazines were out there? Hard to know for sure, but many gun owners and law enforcement leaders say there were a sizable amount of pre-94 magazines owned by residents of New York State. And under the SAFE Act, those magazines had to be turned over to law enforcement or sold or destroyed. 13 WHAM News reporter and anchor Adam Chodak took a look at what's happening with those magazines, and he found plenty of questions about how gun owners are responding to the SAFE Act. We're going to get to that conversation in just a moment. But first, I want to bring in Karen DeWitt, our Capitol Bureau correspondent in Albany, talking about the news breaking this morning that State Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos and his son turned themselves into law enforcement. And you heard Preet Bharara last hour, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, detailing the allegations against them. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Evan. Just another Monday at the state capitol.
You know, it sort of feels like that. In all seriousness, this felt a lot like what we saw just over 3 months ago with Sheldon Silver, the Democrat, leader of the Assembly. Today, it's the Republican, the leader of the Senate. Remind our listeners what the allegations are.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who is familiar and followed what happened to former Speaker Sheldon Silver with his arrest and the charges, these charges are similar by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, saying that Senator Skelos used his political influence in Albany to essentially monetize his position, and he's accused of extorting hundreds of thousands of dollars in payments to his son, Adam Skelos, both from a real estate developer and a related environmental company that the real estate developer had some interest in. And then in exchange for getting that money, Skelos essentially protected the developer's business interests at the Capitol, including the renewal of the New York City rent regulations, which is always a big thing every 4 years, and a related property tax abatement for developers. The U.S. attorney and his people, you know, put this together through phone taps, through turning the developer and one of the environmental company people into witnesses, and they essentially pieced this together and find that it's like a complex scheme of extortion, bribery, and fraud, they say. So, like we said, kind of familiar, what happened to former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Essentially, these people are accused of using their jobs here to make money for themselves and their family and not for, representing their constituents.
We're talking millions of dollars. The allegations included that the Skeloses and Adam Skelos used what they call a burner phone, a kind of phone in an effort to avoid detection, and some of those.
And I really do apologize laughing about this because it's like, what else can you do? It's pretty unbelievable. He bought this so-called, throwaway cell phone, a burner phone, said all kinds of things on it, thinking that the feds couldn't trace it. All the time, the feds were listening in to everything he was saying. So he dug himself deeper in a hole, it seems, in terms of the case against him.
One of those conversations detailed in the complaint between Senator Dean Skelos and his son was a kind of conversation that said, hey, we've got to move this conversation elsewhere. That blankety-blank Preet Bharara can hear everything. And it almost sounds cartoonish, but they were obviously concerned that they were being listened to.
Yeah, absolutely. And they should have been concerned, and they were being listened to. I mean, what's kind of amazing is they tried, the complaint alleges that they tried to continue their scheme even into the recently enacted state budget, which was just a little over a month ago, even though WNBC in New York City had reported that Skelos was being looked at, even though former Speaker Silver had been arrested and forced to resign from his position. They were still trying to get money for this environmental company, which had a contract with Nassau County, where Senator Skelos lives, to put in these storm sewer cleaning apparatus of some sort. So they still hadn't completely given up on trying to get the money out of this scheme. They were just trying to be more careful about how they did it. At one point, they even complained that Governor Cuomo pressing for ethics reform was getting in the way of their scheme, which also, I agree, sounds a bit cartoonish.
It does, but we're going to have to hear from them going forward. Sheldon Silver, through his attorney, has indicated that they are going to post a vigorous defense here, and I assume we will see the same from Dean Skelos?
In fact, he issued a statement just a few moments ago saying he's innocent of all the charges leveled against me. He stressed it's not that I'm just not guilty, I'm totally innocent, and he says he fully expects to be exonerated in a public jury trial.
Okay, you know, we'll be open to the evidence as always, but it will be very interesting to hear how they talk about burner phones and things like that, that there, those were just misunderstandings from, on Mr. Barrera's part. We're always open to that possibility, but that will be very curious.
I would remind you the former State Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno was tried twice on corruption charges and was eventually exonerated of all of them, so... It could happen.
Yeah, it certainly could. Karen DeWitt, our Albany Bureau correspondent, reporting this morning and this afternoon on these developments. And if it feels like any other day, I think it's just we've seen a lot of it lately, but we'll see much more of it coming forward as we continue the story. Karen, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Karen DeWitt, and we can't have Karen without member support. Randy Gerben, our WXXI News Director, is here.
And again, a week that we ask for help, our pledge week, but very important, you just heard Karen, who does a phenomenal job, and one reason why she is so good is not just is she a good reporter, but she has been in Albany for a long time, has been reporting for us for a number of years. Very few reporters in the state have that kind of depth, Evan, certainly not in the land of broadcast and radio specifically, and Karen is there for us day in and day out. She will provide the context and the reporting we need on this corruption scandal, which involves not only Dean Skelos, but of course many other people, unfortunately, in Albany these days and in New York City. And Karen will have more reports this afternoon. You can see her work as well online at WXXINews.org. And it's so great for us to have a resource on a day like this when we have these breaking developments and need, again, to put these things in context, but to call on Karen DeWitt, who is, again, our Albany correspondent here at WXXI. You can help make sure that we continue that kind of programming, that kind of coverage, by making a donation now, whatever you can afford. It could be a sustaining member, $10 a month. You want to make a one-time donation, whatever you can do that at WXXI.org, safe, secure website, or you can call us at 454-6300. That's 454-6300. Show your support for the kind of programming you've come to expect, and we continue to provide to you day in and day out here on WXXI.
Randy Gerben, WXXI News Director. Thank you, Randy. All right, let's turn our conversation now, this hour, to the New York Safe Act. And as we open the hour with, there are questions about high-capacity magazines. Now, the New York Safe Act made all high-capacity magazines illegal, giving gun owners a few options on what to do with them if they had them. And if you were wondering, well, weren't they already illegal? The answer is yes and no. If they were pre-94 magazines, they were not illegal, and apparently you could still find them. So Adam Chodak is the 13 WHAM reporter and anchor who dug into this story last week and prompted this discussion. Adam's here. Nice to see you, sir.
Always good to see you.
Ben Pyatt is here. He is a gun owner and an advocate for gun owner rights here in the Rochester area. Ben, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
Gary Putup's on the line. He's a retired police lieutenant. He is with New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, the organization that is working on this issue. He's their Western New York representative, a former NRA member, and he's on the line with us. Gary, nice to talk to you.
Hi, Evan. Thank you.
Adam Chodak, I'm going to start with you. What prompted you to look at this angle of the New York Safe Act?
So a few months ago, I was doing some research in general on the Safe Act, and as many of your listeners probably know, two principal portions have received a lot of attention. One is the registration of assault weapons. So New York states that if you own what we now call an assault weapon, you can keep it, but you have to register it with the state. So there had been questions as to how many people were actually registering the guns with New York. Those numbers are not out. Secondly, there was a lot of attention paid to the 7-round magazine that was mandated by the SAFE Act initially, and then it was moved up to 10 rounds, according to a judge in Buffalo. So those two portions received quite a bit of attention, and I was looking into that, and while doing so, I realized that there was another significant portion of the SAFE Act that dealt with high-capacity magazines. It's related to the 7-round, 10-round debate, but what they basically said was those 30-round or 20-round or 50-round, whatever magazines you have that were legal prior to the SAFE Act, those are no longer going to be legal. And if I could just step back, because I think a lot of non-gun owners may not know what a magazine is.
Sure.
It's basically, it might look like a cigar box, and it is the portion of the gun, it's usually metal, it holds the the bullets, and what happens is it automatically puts another round into the chamber. So you fire one, let's say on a semi-automatic gun, you fire one, it puts another round into the chamber. So if you have a 10-round magazine filled with 10 bullets, 10 cartridges, you could fire off 10 bullets within a matter of seconds, really. And then if you have 30 rounds, that can do the same, only with 30 rounds. So this got a lot of attention after Sandy Hook and after Aurora. Aurora, I think the shooter there is accused of, I think, shooting off something like 154 bullets in a few minutes. So a lot of people then said, wow, that is incredible that you can do that with these high-capacity magazines. That's why the SAFE Act targeted this. So what I did was I then asked a similar question to what we were asking about registration. How many gun owners who owned high-capacity magazines in New York State were abiding by the law? And as you had mentioned, you can do a few things with them, according to New York. You can sell them out of state. You can permanently modify them so they can only hold however many rounds is legal in New York, which is in limbo right now, but it's 7 or 10.
10, yeah.
Definitely not 30 or 20 or 50. Or you can hand them over to police. So what we did is we went to various law enforcement agencies around the state, including the state police, and we said, is anybody turning these in? For the most part, they said, not really, a few here and there. And then we went to gun shops on the Pennsylvania line, thinking that's where a lot of gun owners, if they were going to sell them, that's where they would go, especially in the southern tier or western New York. And every single gun shop owner, for the most part, said, initially we saw a few, but now we don't see many at all. I want to be very careful throughout this conversation. I cannot guarantee that few gun owners are getting rid of their magazines. I don't know that. It's impossible to prove with certainty. At the same time, the evidence that we were able to gather led us to the conclusion that it looks like a large portion of gun owners who had these high-capacity magazines prior to the SAFE Act still have them, and they are unmodified.
All right, let me get Ben and Gary. Ben, as a gun owner and someone who I know you know a lot of people who have been had heated conversations about this debate. Number one, do you see these high-capacity magazines, the pre-94 magazines that were legal until the SAFE Act, did you see them with any regularity?
When they were legal, you would see them in the gun shops or at gun shows pretty regularly. I mean, they were expensive.
How expensive?
They were usually twice the price of a standard magazine. Sometimes you see them for $50 or $60 a piece. And I think that's the concern that people have is like, hey, you know, 2 years ago, I could buy these magazines. I bought 10 at $50 or $60 a piece. Why would I destroy them and lose $600? Or if I sell them out of state, they're not worth what I paid because everyone can buy standard magazines in another state and there's nothing requiring them to buy a pre-banned magazine, so the value goes down.
So what are they doing? Are they putting them in a drawer hoping the act gets overturned?
It's hard to say. I mean, some people may be doing that. They might just be saving them for a rainy day and using the 10-round magazines to practice with. I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, we don't know how many were sold in New York State. There's no way to even track that. They're made by the thousands. So we have no idea how many are in the state, how to track them, how many are sold. The state police won't even release how many people have registered their AR-15s. So I doubt they're going to release any numbers on magazines that were turned in.
Did you have any high-capacity magazines?
No, I did not.
You did not?
No.
Okay. And before I ask Gary the same kind of questions, why wouldn't people, as much as they may not like the law, Ben, it is the law now, why not comply in some way?
Well, I mean, they're probably, like I said before, they probably don't want to take the monetary hit or they don't agree with the law. You know, it's basically you have a $500 investment that's legal, or even let's say you have 20 of them. Now you have a $1,000 investment that's legal. Overnight, it becomes illegal, and you have to no one's offering to pay for them. I mean, if we were to turn them in, is the state going to pay? Obviously not. So they're probably just holding on to them, hoping it gets overturned. Maybe they'll bring it back to where pre-ban is okay. I mean, there's still court battles going on, so that's what I would assume people are doing with them right now.
Now, Gary Puttup with New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, the Western New York chapter, and a retired police lieutenant. Do you contest the notion that there are people who are holding on to these high-capacity magazines against the law, Gary?
Well, you know, Evan, I'm sure that there are people that are breaking the law. It gave me a career, and it keeps policemen in work. I'm not sure where the argument is going. I'm glad to see, you know, I watched the report. I'm glad to see both Adam and Ben agree that this, it's so far all we know is these are beliefs and not knowledge. And no one knows. And there's no base numbers to work with. But that doesn't excuse people from breaking the law. I'm sure in 1934, when the federal government made the possession of machine guns illegal, that there were people that hung on to them. That's not a reason not to move forward and ensure a safer society.
Let me bring in a couple of comments that we saw in the piece. Sheriff Chris Moss from Chemung County was the lieutenant governor candidate last year with Rob Astorino, and he campaigned against the SAFE Act. And we're going to listen to some of his comments about it. This is from Adam Chodak's 13 Wham piece. This is Sheriff Moss talking about his experience with what's going on with high-capacity magazines.
My guess is there's probably a ton of magazines out there that would be considered non-compliant in New York State. It should be a permanent fix to the magazine, but I haven't seen any magazines that have been permanently modified by Chemung County residents.
Okay, so that's Sheriff Moss. And Gary, do you take any issue with what he's saying there? He's saying he thinks there's a ton of them out there.
Well, I do, and primarily because, as he uses the word, he's guessing. And, you know, when we're talking about laws, when we're talking about people's safety, we really shouldn't be guessing. I also have problems with the terminology. He continually uses the terms non-compliant. Let's say what it is. They're illegal. It's unlawful to possess these things. I appreciate in Adam's report, you know, the New York State Police say the same thing. I doubt that the sheriff would be talking about people that have meth labs being in Chemung County as just simply being non-compliant with the law. They're illegal. And the people that have these, they know they're illegal. There was a grace period of some time, you know, and this would be important, and we talk about the financial impact. There was a grace period when people had an opportunity to get rid of these things. If they didn't and they took that hit, like any law that changes, you know, they have to accept a certain amount of personal responsibility there.
But the actual hit would not have benefited from selling within the grace period. People are taking the hit because in New York State alone, you had to own a pre-banned magazine. So if I were to take advantage of that grace period and sell them to somebody out of state, they're not going to pay the premium that I paid because in their state, they can buy brand new manufacturer, standard capacity, 30-round magazines. So the hit's there no matter what. As soon as the law was passed, you took the hit.
Well, that's kind of a moot argument because I had high-capacity magazines because in my career as a police officer, I was allowed to have those. And I had a Smith & Wesson 59 with 15-round magazines. And I was able to sell those just fine. But I don't know when the last time you may have been, like, on Midway USA, Brownells, or some of the gun manufacturers and magazine manufacturers, their catalogs. And you can, you know, and the people, I invite the people at home to go to these on-site and internet gun dealers and gun parts dealers and see what these magazines cost and what they cost before.
And no, again, you're missing the point. The reason they cost more money is because they were pre-banned. You had to have three banned.
This is another
pre-banned.
This is national ban.
I understand
that. You're going to another
but
state,
what other state requires pre-banned magazines? There are no other states that require you to have a pre-banned magazine to have a 30-round capacity. Only New York State required that, meaning that New York State residents had to pay a premium to get magazines that were manufactured before 1994.
If they bought them that way.
That's how you had to buy them.
Well, no, Ben, you could have gone to another state and bought them.
Then you're illegal. It wasn't. If you went to another state, then it wasn't manufactured after 94.
Not before 1994.
Okay.
All right. I mean, we're talking about a law that's been in effect for 20 years. And somebody's trying to make the argument now that we have a law that's been in effect for 20 years, and I'm going to take a financial hit. In the meantime, we have 8 children a day die from gunshot wounds.
Right.
We have places like Sandy Hook, Aurora. We have instances like that. And someone wants to make the argument, because I have to take a financial hit of a couple of $100, we're not going to do something about a public health issue that is completely preventable in this state? That just doesn't wash.
All right, so I want to reset the conversation for our listeners, because I think Gary has pivoted the conversation, and I want to give Ben and our listeners the chance to respond. If you want to call in with comments or questions, please do so. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, to talk about the SAFE Act and some of these various issues. Adam Chodak's report for 13 Wham News last week is what prompted this discussion in our eyes. And I think, Adam, as you mentioned last week, this is the kind of conversation that sparks 5 more. And that's sort of what we're seeing here. But if you want to see Adam's report, I'll throw it up on Twitter with a link to it. Where else can they see it, Adam?
Right on 13wham.com. It's right there, my Facebook page. And if I could, hopefully helping to refocus.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't be successful in this, but I looked into the money aspect, and there's no question you had certain gun owners who decided to sell, and they would lose, say, $20, $30 because the magazine that they bought for $50, they can only get rid of for $20. But I decided in my piece to really stay focused because while that monetary loss is significant to them, possibly, I was trying to look at this as a policy aspect, but also as a principle. And I think that that argument on the side of the gun owners is what I was truly interested in, because some are holding on to it out of principle. And so if someone lost $100 here or there, and I guess to Gary's point, that to me wasn't the main thrust of the issue here. It was the possible, the folks who are trying to make a statement against the SAFE Act.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And Ben Pyatt, for people who lost $100 or $200, there are people who will say, too bad. The state made a choice about a law that they think a values choice as a people. And if you lost $100, I'm sorry you lost $100. What do you say to that?
No, I mean, you can say that for sure. I mean, if it's your money, you might think about it differently. But I think what a lot of the residents in New York State are seeing is the only almost every county in New York State passed a resolution to repeal the SAFE Act, with the exception of the counties surrounding New York City and New York City itself. If you were to look at the map and see which counties are actually opposed to the SAFE Act, it's the majority of the state. I think it was 59 out of 64 counties opposed.
Legislatures, that's true, but polls indicate some general support that I have seen.
And
right?
I did. I went through the polls that you can view on New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. According to their polls, it says that the majority of New Yorkers across the state support this gun safety. But the problem I have with these polls are they're not showing how many people participated. They're including suburbs, and all the suburbs they have listed border New York City, and they do not provide any information on which upstate counties were polled. I wasn't polled myself. None of my friends that I asked about this poll were polled. So I'm just curious if these numbers are construed to fit their agenda of wanting to pass more gun control versus actually getting a realistic view of how the state feels about the law.
Gary Putup, he says, Evan, lies, damn lies, and statistics. What do you say to that?
Yeah, Evan, and I'm glad Ben brought that up. And I would invite people to go to our website and take a look. This is a poll done by Kiley and Company, which is not even a New York company. This is a polling company that's used nationwide. It's got a very good reputation. It's K-I-L-E-Y and Company. It has a margin of error of plus or minus 4%. I have a copy of it sitting in front of me right now. It's very specific. There were 605 voters, not just residents, but voters. Ben's right. They define the suburbs as the suburbs in New York. But if you look at our website and you read the poll, you'll see that from the demographics and the population, there was a representative population of upstate, including the southern tier and the north country. And I would be happy to have this poll and to have you have someone on that works with statistics and will show you that this is a reliable poll. And this isn't the only poll. The Siena poll did something very similar. And I think one of the issues is, and if I could, with and Adam, I hope you take this correctly. One of the things with Adam's report is you're asking people, and I appreciate this, but you're asking people like Hans from Bikerk's, great guy, but he has obviously a subjective financial interest in this. You know, the gun shops on the Pennsylvania border obviously have an interest in this. This is why we like polls like this, because these are conducted by independent polling agencies or organizations that have no financial interest in what these numbers say, like the Siena poll, which showed the same thing, that there's a large number of people in New York that support the ban on high-capacity magazines. If I could just get back to the cost for 1 second, is, you know, we are talking about, you know, and Ben says like $30, $40 magazine, $60, whatever they were, depending on who you talk to. But we're talking about putting these into guns where guys are spending $1,000, $2,000, and $3,000 on. In regards to like the cost to a taxpayer, you know, we do this in many of our laws. If we tell people you have to put a fence up around your swimming pool, that's a cost to the taxpayer. When we tell people when you have a child, you have to buy a car seat so that child doesn't get injured. These are all things we do for the general public safety. So this is not unusual. In regards to the courts, you know, this has passed the Second Amendment smell test on a number of cases. There's aside from the seven rounds, which a court found was arbitrary.
Yep.
The rest of the court cases have shown that this is a good law. We know that it's working. And
how do we
no
know it's working?
Step back on it now. Well, how? You know, that's a good question because so there's a we know that there's a difference between beliefs and knowledge, and we like to work with knowledge. That's one reason why we had this poll done. Another reason why we know it's working is there have been 100 school shootings in the United States since Sandy Hook. Not one of those has been in New York. New York used to have the fifth lowest death rate from gun violence. And before the SAFE Act, with the latest figures since the enactment of the SAFE Act, we are now third lowest.
But, sir, with all due respect,
you know what states were lowest behind? Hawaii and Massachusetts. The Center for Disease Control, the CDC, just released a study within the last 6 months. States like New York, Massachusetts, states with good gun laws, also have a low gun death rate. States with poor gun laws, especially the southern states, some of the western states, Wyoming of all states, a sparsely populated state, has one of the highest. Of all of them,
Wyoming
Alaska
has the fourth lowest
has one
crime
of
rate.
The highest.
Okay.
Sorry, what's that?
Wyoming actually has the fourth lowest crime rate. And if you look at the statistics that are on your website regarding.
All right, again, we're not talking crime rate. We're talking about death.
I know.
Rate.
I'm talking about. I went through your website and I just wanted to point out a few things. The states right. that you actually pointed out with the highest gun violence, the top 10 states that you have listed are actually the top 10 states with the lowest income out of the country. Every one of those states is the actual absolute poorest. And if you look at the state, those statistics within each of those states, the gun violence is occurring in the extremely poor areas. If you look at the.
Well, Ben, let me ask you this next, because Vermont is the poorest state in the union.
Yes. No, actually, Mississippi is right now.
Well, actually, it's Vermont, but that's fine. And I'll read you this right. And this comes from a report that was just published by the Institute for Research, the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation, as long as you bring up Wyoming.
Yeah, and Vermont
Wyoming
actually has the lowest crime rate in the country.
Wyoming has, yeah. Well, this is what's interesting and why we need good gun laws. If they have the lowest crime rate, why? And let me quote from the report. It also has the nation, this is a quote, nation's highest rate of gun deaths despite its small population. It also has the highest cost per capita of any state. It's $1,397 for every citizen is taxed every year because of gun violence. Ben, I mean, you're really making my point. You're talking about a state that has a low crime rate and yet has the highest death rate by gun violence. Why is that?
Because you're just looking at it as like the whole state. If you actually look at the state, go on the FBI's website, use their 2013 Uniform Crime Report, and look at where these crimes are occurring. They're happening in the cities, in the slums, and they're gang violence and drug-related murders. And then you use the statistics that X amount of children are shot every day. Well, the problem with that is on your website, you consider children 19 years old, sometimes 20 years old, still classifying them as children. 18 years old, you're an adult. So 17 and younger should be considered a child. And how many 16 and 17-year-olds are involved in gangs and are involved in shootings at the age of 16 and 17?
All
if
right.
they're selling drugs, should they be considered
let
a child if they get shot?
Let the host have the floor for a moment. Gary, I'll let you respond to that comment. Then we've got to get a break, and we've got callers who want to jump into the conversation. Gary,
Ben is saying you
count 18, 19, and 20-year-olds as children. Is that right?
No, I think it's 18, but the question I have
it's on your website.
You know, and we've had, if it's 19, that's fine. And Evan's had neuroscientists on before. We've talked about this. We're raising the age of criminal responsibility in New York because neuroscientists will tell us, they know the temporal lobes of a human being, especially a male, which develops slower than females, aren't fully developed until they're in their early 20s, which means a 16, 17, and 18-year-old doesn't actually have the capacity to make the decision as to what the long-term consequences of his acts are. And you want to hand these people assault rifles or high-capacity magazines makes no sense.
All right. We've got to get to a break here. I've been talking to Gary Puttup on the line. You hear him. He's a retired police lieutenant. He is the Western New York representative for the organization New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. Ben Pyatt is in studio, an advocate for gun owner rights and a gun owner in the Rochester area. Adam Chodak's here from 13 WHAM News. And your phone calls coming up right after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we continue to follow the story of State Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. Skelos and his son turned themselves into federal authorities Monday morning. We'll talk about corruption charges against them. And we'll also talk about Rudy Giuliani. Coming to Rochester this weekend, he is the commencement speaker for St. John Fisher College, but some professors don't want him there. We'll hear from them and from students. Talk to you Tuesday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Genesee Country Village, opening for the season this weekend with Mother's Day programming, including activities such as chocolate-making demonstrations and Victorian fashion shows on Sunday. GCV.org. And the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're waiting on the phone, we are coming to you next. But before we get there, a brief word from our news director of WXXI, Randy Gorman.
Great discussion. Safe Act, again, one that you might get a short shrift of in some other venues. But here we tried to, again, give you some in-depth thinking about it. Great job by your guest today. And again, it's an issue that will be ongoing here in New York State for a long time, as will the corruption issue we're covering this afternoon with the word that Dean Skelos is facing a number of charges along with his son. And the place to get that is WXXI. But to do that, we need your help as part of our pledge drive this week. We try to only do this a few times during the year. But if you could think of us right now, any kind of donation, any size, would be welcome. 454-6300. That's 454-6300. Or you can just make a nice, secure donation online at WXXI.org. We'll be doing this for the next few days. But again, we need that support so we can continue the kind of in-depth programming that you get here on Connections. Evan doing a phenomenal job every day. But again, it takes staff. He's not the only guy involved in this. A lot of backup involved here and a lot of research. And that all takes some support.
Thank you, Randy. Vote with your wallet, in other words, as we often say on this program. Let me get to some of your phone calls. I'm going to start with Chad in Rochester. Go ahead, Chad.
Yes, it was mentioned earlier in the conversation that maybe 7 or 8 children are dying each day due to gun violence. And my question is, what percentage, or is it known, what percentage of those deaths actually occur with a automatic, semi-automatic weapon that may even be taking one of these said illegal magazines? Because I would imagine that that's actually probably in single digits. Go ahead.
Chad, thanks for the phone call. Let me kick it to Gary with New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. Is it accurate to say that the, Gary, that the number of shooting incidents with big number deaths, whether it's Sandy Hook with 20 plus, et cetera, tend to involve what you call assault rifles, but the overall numbers, mostly they're handguns. Is that right?
No, you know, that is correct. And I'm glad that Chad called and brought that point up, because although I know we're focusing here on high-capacity magazines today and why they're illegal and people should comply with the law, this is a big problem. In the United States right now, 17 of the 50 states, the leading cause of death is gun violence. That your teenager is more likely to die from gun violence than in an automobile accident in 17 states. We are getting to the point that if these continue, that probably within about 10 years, amongst 15 to 24-year-olds, gun deaths will surpass car accidents as the leading cause of death in America. No one is proposing that the banning of high-capacity magazines is going to put an end to suicide, an end to violence, an end to human nature. But what we are proposing is that when you have these mass shootings, these slaughters, what happened in Tucson, Arizona, those were 33-round magazines that were used in a Glock, then that person was stopped when he was trying to reload. There's no really reason for civilians to have these kind of weapons. And when we see what happens to the public safety and the public concern and the cost of the average American, it's reasonable to think that we need to start passing better gun laws. And it's not as if that this is unproven territory. It's not as if that we don't know the answers to these things. Because we can look at similar cultures, we can look at similar societies. I mean, we are the only one of the four frontier nations from the old British Empire that has this issue. And why is that? I mean, Canada has a very similar culture to ours,
We watch the same TV shows. We see the same video games. But there's a huge difference. I mean, we're the only nation that suffers this way.
Well, let me ask Ben.
And it's very, very costly. The latest indications are, the latest study shows that this costs the American taxpayer almost $230 billion a year, the results of gun violence. Can you imagine? I mean, when we were talking about single-payer universal health care, that we had people that say, well, if that's $10 billion a year, we won't do it. $230 billion every year.
All right.
For gun violence.
Yeah, let me answer Chad's question that you kind of dance around Chad's question there. His question was, how many of these 8 children per day are being shot with high-capacity magazines, or, as you guys call them, assault rifles? The answer, Chad, is it's such a small number that it's statistically insignificant. Less than 2% of all homicides nationwide involve a rifle of any kind, and that includes hunting rifles, normal 22 long rifles, less than 2%. So these child deaths, as he refers to, are actually drug dealers, kids who are 16 that he says are brains haven't developed yet. Well, they're selling drugs and they're shooting each other over drug wars. They're selling guns, stealing guns, robbing homes, getting shot. And it's people, some of it may be people defending themselves, but the majority of it is they're shooting each other. Kids who are teenagers, and to say that an 18-year-old shouldn't have a rifle, well, sir, do you have any problem with an 18-year-old joining the military, getting a rifle, and going over to protect the country, or are you saying that his brain's not developed enough to do that?
Gary?
No, try to compare them. You know, these are the red herrings that we like to send out. That, you know, trying to compare, you know, a situation like that with being in the military is actually, it's like...
I'm not comparing it to the military. I'm comparing mental capacity. You said that 18-year-olds don't have a fully developed brain. Well, then they shouldn't be allowed to enlist in the military if they don't really know what they're doing and they can't be held accountable for their actions.
That's not that, you know, Ben, that's not what we're discussing today. I would love to have...
But you made that comment, sir.
I think if Evan were to have some neuroscientists and people from the VA, and actually I've talked to the VA that do question that, and we can see what's happened with the suicide rates with our veterans. But I don't want to go off into the bushes, Ben. I didn't dance around the question. The answer, yes, those numbers are low. We don't propose that banning high-capacity magazines is necessarily going to put an end to the gun violence problem.
It's going
to
do nothing.
It is an important... But, Ben, it's an important piece.
Less than 2% involve rifles altogether. So how is it going to change anything?
All right, we heard that point.
If you don't put sugar is just like one of those small things in the cake, but if you don't have it in the cake, it tastes awfully bad.
Listen,
that doesn't make sense.
I think Ben needs to, at least before I get back to the phones, and every line is lit up here. Adam, did this happen with your news report too? You probably got a little bit of response to 13 Wham.
Yeah, yeah. This, of course, they don't allow us to have phones because I think they fear what I would do with them. So we get tweets and Facebook comments, and it really does. Anytime you mention SAFE Act and firearms, you get a lot of, not just comments, what's interesting too, is just a lot of emotion.
Well, and before I get to the phones, and I'm coming back to the phones, I want to just ask Ben one more question, and let's try not to tie up the rest of the hour with this. But Gary raised the point that said, look at Canada. Look at the empires we're talking about. Look at Britain. Why, Ben, do we have a much higher rate of gun violence and death compared to the Canadas, et cetera, of the world? What's the short answer that you have for that?
A lot of it, I think, is derogation of the family home. We have a lot.
But you don't think they have that in urban centers and other places?
I'm not sure. I haven't really looked at Canada's demographic and what they actually have going on in their cities. But if you just take a look at our cities, look at how many shootings happened in New York alone this year, and then take a look at where they happened, how they happened, and why they happened. Let's look at the Gates Bar, for instance. The gentleman who was involved in that shooting was already twice convicted. He went into a bar, shot up people. Did he use a high-capacity magazine? We don't know. The statistics aren't released on what was used. But I think that a lot of our problem in America is situations just like that. Did he buy that gun legally, or was it acquired illegally? We don't know. So I guarantee you he didn't go to a gun shop and get a background check.
Gary, 30 seconds, and then we got to get back to the phones. Go ahead.
Yeah. Every gun that's manufactured is manufactured and put on the market legally. Then it ends up in the hands of somebody like at the Gates Bar. That's the problem. We don't have enough control. We don't have a handle on this situation. And one of the reasons we don't have a handle on this situation is, I think what Adam found out, is that, that groups like the NRA and others have actually forbidden the government from collecting the data. If we were to look at any other consumer product, anything else that people use and say, listen, we are simply going to make it unlawful to collect data on this public health issue, we would be scratching our heads. Look, and here's something that's interesting, because Ben mentioned crime rates. The crime rate in Canada and in Scandinavia and in Britain isn't any higher or lower than on average than it is in the United States. The difference is the lethality of the way we settle our issues. You know, when you walk into a bar, you can easily shoot 7 people with guns that are easily available.
The only people doing that are convicted felons, though.
In Britain, you can't do that because you can't get your hands on the gun.
Normal law-abiding people aren't walking into a bar and shooting up people. The reason that we have the issues we have in our country right now is because people are blaming inanimate objects for the actions of people. If we had 3 laws and actually enforced them much stricter than we do now, and you dealt with people who are charged with theft of a firearm, or are convicted of possession of a stolen firearm, or are actually left in jail if they use a firearm in a crime, then we can prevent 90% of the tragedies that we have today. Look at Spengler back on Christmas Eve. He was in jail for 20 years for beating his grandmother with a hammer to death, and they let him out, and what did he do when he got out? We're not punishing the people that we know are bad, convicted felons. We're letting them out of jail 5-6 times in their lifetime.
Wait, hold on. You chose William Spengler. Most convicted felons haven't killed somebody. And if your argument is that you need to lock up convicted felons for life,
or death penalty,
you are going to lose, Ben. And I'm not taking sides here in this argument. You can't lock up every felon who has not killed somebody for the rest of their lives.
But if someone murders somebody, should they be, especially in a gruesome manner such
William
as that,
Spengler is different.
Should
William
he be
Spengler
let out?
is a
but
horrifying
how
case.
Many mass shootings have we had in New York State, and who was involved in the most recent? Why was he let out of prison? So but when he did that, what do we hear on the news? We heard, oh, he used this gun. This gun did this. What a tragedy. We need more gun control.
He's the outlier.
Actually,
though,
we need more people. We need people like him off the streets. If he had the death penalty back when he beat his grandmother, it wouldn't have happened, would it?
You know what? This is really a different argument, because, you know, just like every gun is legal when it's manufactured, everyone is born law-abiding.
Correct.
Adam Lanza was a law-abiding citizen until he walked into Sandy Hook. Spengler was a law-abiding citizen until he beat his grandmother to death. All right. The guy that shot up the place in Gates was a law-abiding citizen until he started violating
Would
the law.
Would the SAFE Act have prevented any of the mass shootings we've had
that
recently?
That is not an answer to our problem.
But would the SAFE Act prevent any of the most recent mass shootings? Would it have prevented any of them?
Absolutely.
How?
You answered your own question. Adam Lanza walked into a school with high-capacity magazines. In Aurora, a man walked into a theater with a 100-round magazine on an assault
that jammed
rifle
on him. And how many? But I'm saying, would the SAFE Act have prevented them from doing it whatsoever?
Well, if he didn't have that,
Adam Lanza took the firearms from his mother, who purchased them legally, correct? So he still had, even if they had the SAFE Act in his state, he still could have obtained those firearms and still went to the school and did what he did, correct?
No.
No.
That's absolutely incorrect, Ben.
Why?
Well, because in New York State, it is possible that his mother didn't have the assault rifle prior to that. She wouldn't have been able to get an assault rifle.
Have you seen the rifles that are on the market right now in New York State? You can walk into Dick's and purchase?
Ben, you want to go back to the days when those were easily and readily available. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want
rifles are not any harder to obtain now than they were before the SAFE Act.
I have to stipulate as the host here. I have to stipulate as the host that there is a certain percentage of shooting crimes in this country that every law in the books would not prevent. But I also have to stipulate that the less available something is, the less likely it's going to be used in something. Does anybody disagree with that point? Is that crazy?
I see what your point is, but the law that we made, that we rushed out, passed in the middle of the night because you guys didn't want to hear anything from the opposing side, you wanted to rush it through as fast as you could, would the law have been better if it included increasing the penalty and making the punishment worse for theft of a firearm, for possession of a stolen firearm, or for use of a firearm in a crime? Would that have a greater effect and deter people more than trying to ban the inanimate object that you can still easily obtain anywhere you want to go? If you want one, you can go get one right now within 3 hours.
We needed 2 hours for today. I am negligent if I don't get another phone call in. This is okay. Dan in Williamson. Go ahead, Dan.
Hello?
Go ahead, Dan. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
I just had a kind of a different take on this. I'm a gun owner just recently. I don't hunt, don't intend to hunt. I shoot a little bit for practice. I bought my guns for personal protection to protect my family. And, you know, I don't think that's something that's been covered here is the SAFE Act doesn't make me feel any bit safer, you know, as far as the law is going to protect me. But it makes me feel a little less safe for my ability to protect myself.
Okay.
And
okay.
I'm not a gun advocate. I'm not a weekend warrior or anything. Just a normal guy with a family.
Sure.
And, you know, that's my take on it.
So, but Dan, how are you less safe in protecting your family?
Dan, see, well, I have a question. Because having been a police officer for 30 years and very familiar with home defense and the use of firearms in home defense, are you seriously telling, and first of all, an assault rifle with a high-capacity magazine is not a good home defense weapon. I mean, you can go and buy Guns and Mammo's magazine, and they'll tell you that. They'll tell you consistently.
It's an amazing home
defense
weapon.
Is a pump shotgun.
Well,
and make,
my
maybe
home
like
defense
a 40...
weapon currently is a 12-gauge pump shotgun.
Right. So, and it was,
with birdshot in it because I don't want it to exit my home and harm anybody else, and I want to be able to get what I'm aiming at and deter anybody.
So my question is, and Evan, if you can't, how has it made you less safe?
Okay. Have you watched TV recently and just saw what happened at Baltimore when the police were asked to stand down and allow hundreds of, or up to 100, whatever, personal dwellings, homes, to be burned up? And what if, you know, I imagine some people were in those homes when their house was set on fire and had to exit their home out into an angry mob. And if that were to happen to my family, I would like to be able to protect myself and my family.
Dan.
And right now, if you want to call 911 so that the police can put some caution tape or whatever barriers around your dead body, that's great. But
Dan, you're worried about an angry mob. You're worried if you have to run out into the streets of Williamson and your house is burning and you need a high-capacity magazine to handle an angry mob?
Me, personally, I don't think that would happen in my neighborhoods.
I think you're right.
I'm just saying, in general, as you know,
Rochester,
a person
for sure.
That loves the freedoms that America provides, I just see all this stuff as we're avoiding the real problems, the real issues, and we're fighting with each other. I want gun safety. I don't want people getting hurt. I want my family to be safe. I'm just saying, as a normal person sitting back, I don't have anything on either side of this, other than it bothers me. For one, I want to be able to protect myself because I don't believe in, you know, waiting for the government to do it for me. And also, I see freedoms keep getting stripped and stripped and stripped. And excuses made, and it's division.
Okay, Dan, thank you for the call. Gary, I'm going to get you in a second. Ben, briefly, I know your point, you just said, hey, it could happen in Rochester. That's not going to happen in Williamson. Dan's got some odd view of what could happen there. But you're saying, hey, it could happen in Rochester.
Yeah, absolutely it could.
Okay, but is that a justification that you need? Give me a sense for. Explain to our audience who says to you, you should have a handgun. You should have something in your house if you want it. Tell me what you need something with 20 or 30 or 50 rounds for. Help me understand it. Go.
Well, for first of all, it's just pleasure. You go outside and have fun. Second, let's say maybe I won't need it myself. Maybe I will. Maybe I have 3 or 4 people come into my home at once, which does happen in home invasions,
almost
correct?
Never. Almost never.
It happens.
Almost
you can't
never.
Say never. Your home almost
you
never.
You used the term statistically insignificant to describe people who were shot in movie theaters and schools.
What are the statistics that your home's going to burn down?
Almost,
do you have homeowner's insurance?
Almost zilch. Almost zilch.
I'm
just giving you an honest answer. Four
I'm
people coming into your house? I will look it up for you. It's really small, but go ahead.
Anyway. Well, okay, so forget that. Let's say my wife is home alone and she has my rifle. Is she going to hit him on the first shot or the 9th or the 10th? We don't know. What if she needs 15? Why are you telling her she can't have that? And to say an AR-15 is not a good home defense weapon is completely wrong. I mean, with modern ammunition, with frangible rounds, you hit the AR-15 will disintegrate faster in a wall with the correct ammunition than buckshot or a slug will with a shotgun.
Gary,
hands down.
Gary, I've got a minute left. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I hate to think where even Ben is going with all this and the problems that our society has. You know, two things are this. You know, and again, as a retired police officer, I'm sure the last thing the Baltimore police and the Maryland State Police needed was a whole bunch of people running around with high-capacity magazine assault rifles, feeling that they were
not
going
running
to
around,
solve
standing
the
in front
problem.
Of their home protecting it is not running
and,
around.
And in addition to that, listen to the statement that Officer Lance Duffy made after the shooting at the Gates Bar, at the Gates Pub. The biggest problem the police are having, one of the reasons I do this work, and I'm a volunteer, is because I'm concerned about the safety of my fellow officers and what this country is and is turning into. The biggest concern is they were showing up there and they didn't know who had how many guns. You know, things have changed a lot. The last thing we need is these people that are talking about, I need a gun to go out on the street to somehow restore order, that the police can't.
That's not what we were trying
to
make.
People
should
crazy.
Never do that. But we're talking about, let's say I'm a Baltimore resident right now. I think what Dan was trying to say was, I want to stand in my home, and if someone comes to my house that I am in and tries burning it down, I will shoot them. I'm not going to go out in the streets and chase people around and try to restore order. I'm protecting my personal property. No one can tell me I can't do that.
Nothing in the SAFE Act keeps you from doing that, Ben. You're safe.
It does, but it hinders you from doing it correctly.
All right. See, what we see this hour, I think, is partially what came out of Adam Chodak's report, which is that this kind of disagreement, especially on the part of people like Ben who say, hey, I want to be able to protect my family, is partially why I think we're seeing at least questionable levels of compliance.
And
Adam, fair?
Oh, and I am still here, by the way. I just wanted to assure your audience that I haven't.
Well, it's been nice having you.
this has been great.
Adam, thank you for the report.
Thank you, Gary.
Gary Putup, thank
nice
you.
Nice talking to you, Gary.
Ben, thank you.
Thank you.
Believe it or not, Ben and Gary do want the same good outcomes for people.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to have these
conversations.
We're
going to have lunch right after this, me and Gary.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.